You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. Now, our show called In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. Good day, Katina.
Hi, Katrina. little tongue-tied for July.
A little tongue-tied. You know, my whole family calls me Tina, so it's hard talking to them and then talking to
me, another Tina. Yeah, I get it. Well, I am excited that July is here just because I think we're going to get more sun because we've had so much May gray and June gloom this year.
So much. And I've experienced, let me ask you, since we're talking about June gloom, sidetracking a little bit, I have gotten so much powdery mildew.
Yeah, I've had more this year than in many years. Yeah. But I'm a little closer to the beach. So we've really been socked in with gray days since April. So I'm not surprised that we've had more this year.
Yeah, but I'm inland.
Yeah, and you're still getting it.
Oh, wow. And earlier than usual, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bummer. Well, I suspect, though, that as July rolls through, we're going to be dealing with heat, and we're going to probably be wishing for some of those cooler days. So I think a lot of our show today will be what we should be doing to help keep our gardens thriving, which is probably has a lot to do with water, and then how we can keep our veggies, continuing to go because it's, gosh, in July, they're usually producing like gangbusters. So those will probably be our two main topics, but we'll save a little time for some flower garden stuff, I think.
Yeah. Always have to.
Yeah. So let's start by talking about watering. I have a couple of trips planned this summer. Do you guys have any planned?
Not really this summer. Usually we do. But let's talk about those of us who we've done a lot of summer trips.
Yeah. And my issue is if I'm only gone for a week, then it's pretty easy for me to keep the garden going because I have a gardener once a week. And the main issue at my house is the pots because the rest of the garden is on automatic sprinklers. So as long as we check our automatic sprinkler system, as we were discussing in great detail last month for June, we advised everybody to do a full-on check of every sprinkler head and the timer, make sure their timers are set appropriately. But if you're like me, I don't have my pots on drip or anything. Do you have yours?
No, I don't.
Yeah. So that's often where things come crashing down, right? When you go on vacation is the poor pots. So if I'm only gone for a week and I water the day that I leave and then I have the gardener water, you know, then that's usually sufficient. But this year I am taking a bigger trip. So I've been looking online at some little tools that you can use to help your pots.
Well, tell us what you found.
Have you ever used anything, or do you just, you have a house sitter because you have pets, right?
Yeah, you know, I have a couple dogs, and I got fish, and I got llamas, and so I always have to have someone staying, so they've always watering my pots, so I don't have to worry. My biggest thing is they remembering to water,
the pots. So, well, you can always text them, I guess.
Yes. So, but for yourself, you know, you don't have the house sitter like I need to have. When we leave, so that's a whole other issue.
Folks can do exactly what I did, which is just type into a search bar, you know, how to keep your pots watered during vacation. And I had no idea, even though I get gardening catalogs and see some things, I had no idea of the great variety that's out there. So anyway, I'll just share a couple of them and then folks can go online and, you know, find their own solutions because they vary from the, you know, pretty primitive and inexpensive to things that are more expensive and a little more complicated, you know, require drip tubing and timers and electricity and all that kind of stuff. But some of the easy ones that I think I'm going to order is there are these watering spikes that basically are hollow and you fill them with water. And then some of them are clay, and so they just, you know, ooze out through the clay. Some of them have a little drip dial that you can just twist so that it, you know, drips so many drips, you know, so frequently. And so that I think that's what I'm going to get, because then when my gardener does come and water, he can just fill up those reservoirs as well as watering the pot so that it has water over a longer period of time.
You know, what I just thought of is to try them out before you go.
Oh, you know what? Thank you for suggesting that, because that's probably a really smart idea.
When you were talking, I just had this, like, one of them going drip, like a drop a day, and the other one dropping everything in one day.
Yeah.
So how do you fine tune those? So that'd be something for you to practice with or look for, how much water it gives out on a daily basis and how much do you really need for that particular pot? Is it in the shade? Is it a high water usage
plant? Exactly.
You know, is it the sun with a high water usage? Yeah.
So yeah, and one of them I saw was was for house plants, and it actually had a picture of someone who had moved all of their house plants onto a kitchen counter, and then this was basically a little drip system from a big bucket of water, and you just ran the drip line, you know, to each of your pots individually. So
there's something for everybody. You're saying,
yeah, it is. So. You can use them both indoors and outdoors. But I kind of like these ones that are these spike plants, because they come in all different types. Some of them are like glass globes with a...
Very decorative.
Very decorative, that come in different colors. You might even want to use them, you know, all year long, because they just leave them there. You don't have to fill them with water, but they just look pretty, you know, add a little color to your pot.
But also, if you have a busy life, it might also help you all year long, too.
Because I am notoriously terrible. I'm great in the garden, but I'm horrible with houseplants. I don't know why. But
I'm
the
same way.
I don't want to be inside. I want to be outside. I guess that's the issue. So, and then if you have bigger areas, I already have my raised bed set up like this, but for folks who, because I do know, have friends that just hand water their raised beds. They just like the control, you know, for their veggies to be able to see whether or not it needs water, et cetera.
My husband.
Your husband? Yeah.
We've had two different kinds of, fully installed two different kinds of systems. And he took them both out because he likes to hand water. So God bless him. If he wants to hand water, he can hand water.
Yeah. And I actually like to hand water. It's just, you know, do you get around to it is my issue. And then, of course, when you're on vacation, you're not going to be there. So I would say one of the suggestions, and it's what I use all year long, is just buying a soaker hose from a big box retailer. Mm-hmm. They're so easy to install. You just, you know, screw them onto a faucet and then run them, you know, wherever you need them. And if you're going to be on vacation, I don't usually have mine on a timer, but I have timers that when I go on vacation, I screw the timer onto the faucet and then the soaker hose onto the timer. And that way the timer, you know, takes control of. I prefer when I'm at home to just monitor it myself because again, of where I live, some days are cloudy, some days are not cloudy. And so I rather would
and then
turn
if you have
it
Santa
on.
Anna wins,
exactly.
You need a lot more.
So I don't use the timers when I'm at home, but you know, when you're gone for a few weeks, perhaps it will be a little over or under watered, but at least it'll get water because the timer will come on. So anyway, that's some tips for folks, you know, for vacation, which is often happening in July. More and more, I think it's happening in July because kids start back to school so early in August these days.
Another thing is if you watering and you have someone watering for you, leave directions.
Oh, absolutely.
It's amazing how many people just don't understand and they could either drown or dry out your plants really easily.
Yeah. You were telling me a story about someone you knew who kept watering and didn't understand why their plant was dying. And you could see that there was 2 inches of water, you know, standing water in the bottom of the tray. And you're like, well, I think maybe you're watering a little too much.
So they watered some more because it wasn't doing well.
Overwatering causes, as we know, as much problems as underwatering. But in July, outside, it's probably hard to overwater. Yeah. The reason I leave notes for folks when I do have someone coming to water is I have pots everywhere. And it would be so easy to miss them in a certain location. Mm. So that's one of the reasons I leave notes is, you know, check this side of the house, check in front of the garage door, check here, check there.
I do the same thing.
And then just a couple other tips. Maybe you have some tips too, but one of the ones that I do, not when I'm away, because the wind could destroy them, but when I'm home and I know it's going to be a particularly hot day, and say I've planted some new tomatoes, mm-hmm. I just get my beach umbrella and screw that into the soil, mm-hmm. and just let that shade the tomatoes for a couple of days till they get acclimated.
I start using a golf umbrella for the first time.
There you go.
This
yeah.
last year, I really, and how I used it is I had some late season broccoli and I really didn't want them to bolt. And I was out there, I couldn't believe I was laughing with my golf umbrella, but guess what I got is I got late season broccoli. And the same thing with your new babies, your beach umbrella or whatever, if you have time and energy to do that, that can really, until they get strong enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then if you have things, the beach umbrella works well.
Large area.
If you have, but kind of a condensed area, right? Mm-hmm. That it's not like a row, right? If you planted a row of something and you wanted to shade that, the beach umbrella or the golf umbrella might not work very well. So in that case, what I do is I pound a few stakes along the row and then I have a length of shade cloth that I just keep folded up in the garage. And when I plant new plants and it's going to be hot, I just throw that over the stakes. And, you know, that way you can do a whole row.
Now, let me ask you, do you mm-hmm. only do that with small baby plants that you're transplanting? Or do you do it with, if you buy a pot at the local nursery, do you also shade that for a period of time?
Oh, good question. It depends on the plant. You know, if it's a really heat tolerant plant, then I probably wouldn't shade it. But you know, just say I was planting, you know, something in my flower garden, you know, gave up the ghost. And so I wanted to plant some new cosmos, just something, you know, real mm-hmm. simple. Well, when you buy six packs, you know, they're just not very big, right? Mm-hmm. So they're more sensitive to stress. And so I would, in that case, probably use the beach umbrella or the shade cloth just for a couple days, you know, just till they've gone past that transplant shock stage, you know, and their roots are starting to reach out into the soil. So I wouldn't leave it up for more than a week, but, you know, depending on the weather, you know, two days to a week, probably. Yeah. So anything else you can think of that's good for watering or conserving moisture?
I just bought one and I don't know what it is, but it's a pot that you pour water into it and it self-waters for a period of time.
Oh.
So I could put like 2 gallons, it's a good sized pot, I could put 2 gallons of water in this thing. So I would report back to you on how
that works. Yeah.
It's in an area where it's a long way to get a hose to.
Oh, smart.
And it's something that, you know, I don't want to be dragging cans over all and it's in a sunny spot. So I'll report back and let you know.
Yeah, I'll make a note about that so we can talk about it again. Yeah. Yeah, the last thing that we talked about last month, too, that you can do to help conserve moisture is to mulch your flower beds and your vegetable gardens. And in the veggie garden, I like to mulch with straw. And in the flower garden, you know, I'll mulch either with compost or if it's shrubs that I'm not going to be, you know, disturbing, I'll mulch with shredded bark or small bark chips.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. And that helps.
I tell you, I'm inland and in my vegetable garden, it gets really hot and that straw is amazing. And it's inexpensive and it's great. And I plant a plant as soon as it gets a little tall enough, it gets encircled by straw.
Yeah, I agree. Half the years I don't get around to getting it because it's kind of a hassle for me to, you know, run to a feed store and get a half a bale of hay if you can find it. But I found at one of the nurseries this year, they were selling, you know, small bags of straw, and it was obviously more expensive than if you went and bought a whole bale of straw at the feed store. But the convenience of not having to lug that big old thing. And I've had the best strawberries I've had in a couple of years because I mulched them this year with straw and they just love it. That's why they're called strawberries.
And you know what else the mulching does? It makes it look so pretty.
Oh yeah.
We have a huge pile of mulch and I hire, because I live on a larger piece of property, and we just put mulch underneath all our fruit trees, and it just made a pop.
Oh, it does. In fact, the community that I live in, I'm on the landscape committee for the community, and so I always get them to plant poppies, California poppies, every year. And so the poppies just finished, you know, about a month ago. And like any plant that's, you know, done blooming, it looks a little sad. So they weed whacked them down, and then they put mulch over those areas. And so even though the poppies aren't there anymore, it just still looks so tidy and, you know, really clean and fresh, even though there's some blank areas where the poppies used to be. Once you mulch it, you don't even know.
You know, we have this compost pile that we just got into that's just huge, and we put it under the trees, and it's just so rich. You know, it's from an aesthetic point of view, it's besides keeping the moisture in and saving on water and dropping all the wonderful nutrients into the soil, it looks good.
It does. Clean. It looks great. But we will just share one word of caution, and that's about fire, because we are in the start, although I guess maybe we have fire season all year now in California, but July particularly is the start of fire season. If you live near open space, like Katrina and I do, I no longer mulch the edges of my property towards the open space because those bark chips can burn. And so not wanting to have an extra source of fuel, I only mulch, you know, my veggie beds and my flower beds, but I do not mulch, you know, up against the open space area.
And what I've been using is the compost.
Yes, yes.
So it's just, I've stopped using the bark chips,
yeah.
And I'm using the compost that we've been working on for years, or you could buy at the store.
Sure.
And that's less, my only concern right now is what's going to happen with the hay, you know,
yeah.
Or not the hay, the straw.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we're only mulching our veggie garden, so we're not mulching the entire garden with straw. We're just doing that in our veggie garden. Yeah. So hopefully that's okay. And speaking of veggie gardens, how's yours doing?
Wonderful. Tell me about your garden, Tina.
Well, mine, because I've been growing more grandkids than veggies the last couple of years, mine's doing okay. But I haven't been able this year to pay as much attention to it as I would like. But I did get some zucchini planted, and the peppers are finally starting to grow. They, because I live closer to the coast, don't like this cool weather. The peppers are like, wait. Where's the heat? We want some heat.
Well, let me tell you about my garden. I am having a great year. I don't have the grandbabies running around, so we didn't work on those this year. So we worked on a garden in our home. So we're just producing like crazy. And, you know, we have the Japanese eggplants and tomatoes. And I got my favorite cosmic kale going and several other kinds of kale going. And got green beans and zucchini, and I have the spaghetti squash that has taken over the neighborhood. It just has grown and grown and grown, and now I have it growing up the side of the walls.
Wow.
Because it's just like, I'm like, what did we do with this thing? And it's just growing, and then we have, oh my gosh, I have different kinds of squash growing. And it's just, and tomatoes.
Do you have a farm stand? It sounds like it's so much you could never eat it.
Neighbors are happy. We had friends came over last night, and we sent them home with onions, and we sent them home with zucchini and green beans, and what else do we? Oh, carrots. And so, like, we don't bring like a bottle of wine. We just bring vegetables when we see people.
Yeah.
And so it just. And I tell you, one of the biggest things I've learned from you, Tina, is I have been meticulous about keeping my garden tidy this year and keeping, when leaves are turning yellow, getting them off the plant, and everything is just, it's helped so much. It really is, and it's aesthetically pleasing, but taking that little bit of time every day just to grab whatever it is, it's really, I can't believe how much I'm producing out of this garden, you know, being very mindful.
It really difference. If you leave, you know, because all tomato plants start getting, you know, some fungal stuff going on their leaves, right? Mm-hmm. But if you keep those leaves picked off as soon as you start seeing it, you're limiting the number of fungal spores that are in your garden. And I really do think that helps slow down. You know, you're never going to stop the fungal stuff from happening, but I really think it slows it down if you pick it off, you know, at the first sign of disease. And then also, you know, yellowing leaves attract other insects that are not beneficial. So
I hear you. Years ago, you told me that. Yeah. And it's just like, I just get all the yellowing leaves. That's every, you know, whenever I go in the garden. And my husband says, I've never seen it look so good and produce so much. And we're producing much more with less plants. And it's just, I'm just keeping it really tidy and getting rid of those yellow leaves. Another thing I'm really on top of is rodents.
Gosh.
And, you know, that's what, if I
it's
want
so
to have
hard.
A vegetable garden.
Oh, so hard, yeah.
We constantly, I have traps set all the time. And you might not see them during the day, but I'm catching these guys.
I just installed an owl box.
Because I love my owl boxes.
I had never had one before, but we had such a trouble with gophers this year that we actually hired a gopher guy because I know you were going to help me learn to set them. And I did order the ones that Katrina suggested I order, and I did set them, but we've just had such an infestation. It was just more than I felt I could handle. But anyway, I have read and have heard from another professional landscaper that these owl boxes really keep the rodent population down because the gophers come out at night and the owls are out at night. So they go after the gophers, but they also go after, you know, squirrels and rats and other things.
We have every night I hear owls. So I've seen all different kinds of, like, we have the little screech owls and we have great horn owls. It's like on the fence one day, we're watching the great horn owls. So we have a lot of owls, and it must help, but it doesn't do it all.
Everything. Right.
Because, and also I live up in the hills, so there's just, you know, a lot of, and I live on a creek. So it's like, we call it like the highway of animals coming back and forth. And we have a lot of coyotes, which you think would get some of this stuff too, but I still have to trap.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, if I want to have a garden, I'm not, my husband was doing it for a while and we had so many things eaten. And I told him one of the reasons why the garden is looking so good is it hasn't been attacked by squirrels or rats.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, people decide what they want to do, but, you know, we were told somebody by South Coast Research that just consider a squirrel a fuzzy rat. You know, when you change how you see these things, it might change how you garden. Now, I know it's a hard concept for people, but if you want to have a vegetable garden, you got to think about this stuff because it's not just a singular thing to do to keep your garden healthy.
Yeah, and it's also the tree of life or food chain. If you, like, I used to have bird feeders, you know, with seeds in my garden outside my kitchen window, because I just love watching the birds while I'm at the kitchen sink. But then, of course, that attracts the squirrels because they want to partake of that, you know, seed feeder.
And even the rats.
I was going to say.
I got a rat in my seed feeder before.
And even if you get the squirrel-proof seed feeder, the seed still spills on the ground, and then you're attracting the rats, and then you're attracting snakes. And so,
and then you're attracting the birds of prey that sit on top of your feet, and then they kill the birds in front of you. That's happened in my yard. It's like, oh, the bird of prey just sits on top of the bird feeder.
I had one. We had a nest in one of our eaves, and I watched the ravens come in and just pull that little nest down and take those little babies. It was very traumatic to watch.
Oh, yes. But
so anyway, I've given up, you know, having my bird feeder seeds because I don't want to have more squirrels or snakes in the veggie garden, you know?
When I moved into our house, I had probably 200 stations. I mean, all like these bird feeders.
Oh.
Like 20, like they each had 20 stations in it.
Uh-huh.
And I had them all over the place and I was going through like 50 pounds of bird food a week.
Uh-huh.
And then I finally realized that 20 of the 50 pounds went to squirrels and to rats. And then I finally realized, hey, I can plant flowers that will attract all these birds, and it's so much healthier for them. So it was sad to say goodbye because I had the bird feeders in front of all my windows.
Yeah.
And it was really hard to say goodbye, but then I changed my habits in the yards, and I have all kinds of birds in my yards. You know, it gets loud out there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have to feed them anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't have, it takes down the pressure on the rats and squirrels too.
Right. So it's not that we're advising against bird feeders. You just have to balance what your personal gardening goals are. And if you don't have issues, or your veggie garden is far away from where you might have a bird feeder, then it may not be an issue for you. But do just be aware that if you have bird feeders, it is probably going to attract more rats and squirrels.
And squirrels carry a huge amount of disease.
Yeah.
You know, and they bring things into the yard. And if you have your animals in the yard, you know, they in the grass or wherever in the yard, and the squirrels are in the yard, your animals I had no fleas on my dogs, and they caught a squirrel. And I was checking them every day.
Oh, dear.
And within 45 minutes that I flea combed to make sure they were good, and they got a hold of this squirrel. I brought them up to the house and flea combed them. I had over 100 fleas, these big, huge fleas, on my female dog in less than an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
It
wow.
was just, she was just, I start combing it out, and oh, my gosh. I mean, she was fine, and she got a hold of this squirrel, and we had to take her down and, you know, flea bathe her because she was disinfested.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, so they
wow.
transfer real easily
yeah.
until, I mean, sure, she got a hold of a squirrel, but they're in the grass, too.
Yeah.
You know, so if you don't want to have these other things in your
yeah.
house and you have animals, you just really got to think it through.
Yeah. Try and keep things at least in balance, and you'll be better off. But while you have your veggie garden in this full mode of production, let's talk for a second about how to harvest in the most in the best manner, so that your harvest stays good for you for a longer period of time. And I know you, like I, harvest as soon as you can in the morning, right?
Yeah. And why is that, Tina?
Well, the plants have more water in the morning, and so by harvesting in the morning, you're getting the fruit, the tomato, the pepper, whatever, when it's at its peak of moisture. And then we bring them in, which you want to do. I know people will give me these harvest baskets because they know I'm a gardener, and I love them. So it's tempting to bring like 3 or 4 of them out and harvest and just set things down, you know, in the garden, but as the weather gets hotter and hotter, not a good idea. I try to fill one basket and take it at least in the garage, you know, where it's out of the sun, and then bring everything inside as soon as possible. And it depends on what you've harvested, whether or not you want to wash it. But in general, I don't wash things until I'm ready to use them.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here. You know what? I need to let everybody know that we are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and the opinions expressed and views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station or the university or the UC Board of Regents. So now we can start talking about our veggie garden some more. But yes, harvest in the morning. It'll bring them in. And what else do we want to talk about our vegetable garden?
Well, I know I always have to fight my husband not to store the tomatoes in the fridge.
Oh, yes. he's still doing that?
He's getting better. He doesn't, he's still, when it's time to slice it and make a little salad, he likes his chilled. So he still does that, which is fine if he wants to chill his own. But tomatoes, in my opinion, and the literature, are best at room temperature. Their flavor's at its peak if you store them in, serve them at room temperature.
That's funny.
And then what folks should also remember is, to continue getting that production, you're going to want to give your plants a little bit of food. So an easy way to do it is with a liquid fertilizer. You can get those hose sprayer things and put the liquid fertilizer in, or you can even just buy ready mixed, you know, bottles that have a screw for your hose mm-hmm. to put on. So that's an easy way to fertilize with just the liquid fertilizer. But if you want to use a granular fertilizer, the best thing to do is to what's called side dress, which we mean just putting it around the side of the plant where the root zone would be. So in other words, not right up against the stem or the trunk, say of a tomato plant or a pepper plant, but if you can put it about 6 to 8 inches out in a circle around that plant where the feeder roots would be, that's a great way to fertilize your plant. It's about every 4 to 6 weeks, depending on what your fertilizer directions say.
Okay, so you know what not to do? I got one not to do that I just did by mistake.
Oh, yeah.
I put fertilizer, I wasn't paying attention, and I got it too close to the young plant.
Oh.
And the stalk of the young plant, and it burned it.
Yeah.
So that's another reason. And I was in a hurry, and I wasn't paying attention to where I was putting it, and I burned my little plant. So what Tina's saying is just be mindful. I've done this 80 million times. I know what to do. And I was in a conversation and I wasn't paying attention. And I burned my little plant.
Aww.
So just, yeah.
It happens. And it particularly happens if you're using synthetic fertilizers because they are stronger than organic fertilizers. Mm-hmm. So if you choose to use a synthetic fertilizer, be very, very careful that you're following the directions as to how much to use, because it's pretty easy to burn your plants with any fertilizer, but especially the synthetic ones, because they're a little stronger. And then also, never fertilize on dry soil. Make sure you water so the soil's moist. Mm. And then put the fertilizer down and then water again.
Now, why is that?
Well, first of all, if the soil is dry, you've probably noticed this when you've been gone and it's been hot and the soil is dry and you put water on it, what happens? It often just rolls away, right? Yeah. And so it's not sinking in. So that's the first reason why, is you want to make sure that fertilizer is going to be able to get down to the roots. The other reason, if you're doing that, is that if the water just rolls off, it's going to take your fertilizer and just wash it away. So it's not going to be where you want it to be. And then the other reason is if you water first and the roots of that plant are now nice and moist, mm-hmm. they're going to be able to better absorb the fertilizer when you water it in. So water first, apply fertilizer, and then water again so that it can seep down to the roots.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And July is a great month to plant. Do you usually plant any more veggies in July?
Yes. But I usually plant them from, they're already, not from seed.
Right.
Yeah. I always like to have a second crop. So I'm always planting. Right now, you know, it's June and I have open spaces because I'm waiting. I want to have that second crop of tomatoes, that second crop of zucchini. When your other plants are fading out at the end of the season, you have this new tomato plant or this new zucchini plant or whatever plant you're planting, vegetable you're planting, it's going to push longer into the season.
Oh,
and that's
because who wants to be out of tomatoes?
Who wants to be out of tomatoes or all this other stuff? And then I push the seasons. I really do. And it's like wintertime, I plant every probably 2 weeks. You know, 2 to 3 weeks. In the summer, and I'll do a first crop, because plants live a longer, different time, and how you harvest them and how they're pretty much structured. But always, I push the season, because I don't go to the grocery store and get vegetables. So I push it as long as I can, and by doing a second crop in July, I can, when everything fizzles out, these are put, you know, they're younger and stronger, and they're carrying me on later into the year. And when it gets a little, you know, a little less thing. I don't know what's always going to last longer, but it's nice having that second crop.
Yeah, it is. And especially because the tomatoes and squash plants in particular always end up getting fungal diseases, right? Mm-hmm. And so by planting a second crop, by the time your first crop is really suffering from those fungal diseases, then you don't feel so bad about pulling them out because you've got this second crop ready to take you through the rest of the year. So,
and you know what else I did this year? I planted a sun gold tomato where not in the vegetable garden.
Oh.
It is like on the side of my house, and this tomato is like 6 foot tall, and it is the healthiest plant that I have in the garden. And I'm thinking about it now, it's like it's better than in my vegetable garden, and it's getting. And since it's a smaller tomato, it doesn't need as much sun as those big beefsteaks, but it's easterly facing. along the house, and the thing is like 6 foot tall, and it's going crazy.
Wow.
So that's something also maybe to think, and we were looking at it this morning, we're going, this is like the healthiest plant we have.
So try them in a new location.
Try in a new location.
Why not? Yeah.
You know, and if it's like a cherry tomato, it might not need as much sun as a big old beefsteak.
True. True.
And I just tried it there. So I've lived there 25 years. And I'm like, well, why haven't I been doing this? And it's nice because they're like little cherry tomatoes and they're right outside the front door by the garage. And you go out and you just cut, pick a half a dozen of them and you don't have to walk all the way to the vegetable garden.
Oh, that's so great.
Anyways, that's great. Another thought.
The other edible stuff we have going on in the garden usually is our fruit trees, our stone fruits especially, are going nuts this time of year. And I love the peaches, the apricots, the plums. Oh my gosh. I'm just always sad that it's not a longer season. But the challenge, as we were talking about earlier with the rodents, applies particularly to these fruit trees, the squirrels and the rats.
You could add the birds to it.
And add the birds to it. So it's always a challenge to get fruit from these trees. So what kind of strategies do you have to keep your fruit protected?
Well, you know, like the cherries are my first ripen of the season, and we had those in May. And that the birds are like party time, right? So I've gotten the metallic like tape streamers, and I've overdosed on all my trees.
And that really helps?
That helps with the birds. I live up in the hills, and I have lots and lots of birds. And that has helped. You know, and there will be some loss on the, like, they'll find the branches sticking out. And then I also have traps underneath my trees.
Oh, for the rodents?
For the rodents.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have it on, I have a lot of trees, but I keep traps there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do,
yeah,
you do it. And pay attention.
Yes. You know, and you have dogs, too, which I think helps if you let your dogs out. I don't have dogs at the moment, so it's a definite disadvantage. So what I've had to go to the last few years is I order these, they're bags, basically. So think of a Ziploc bag, but instead of plastic, they're made out of a fiber kind of, you know, mesh thing. And they just have twist ties at the one end of these bags. And so I literally go out and bag fruit and twist tie it. And of course you can't do that to every piece of fruit that's on your tree, but I was losing so much to squirrels that this has been worth the effort to protect at least enough so that I get some of the crop.
Now, have you ever put the netting over your entire tree?
I did. I used to do that every year, but then my trees got too big and so I can't do that anymore.
If you do the netting, here's one thing. I was so sad when this happened to me, is the birds, if you don't cinch it down around the tree trunk, the birds could get in there.
And they did.
That was just, for me, it was just so sad.
Yeah, I had that happen a couple of times where I would find a dead bird because it had gotten inside and then just, you know, worried itself to death. And that was very sad. So anyway, now I'm not even tempted, though, to use the bird netting because my trees are just too big and I can't get it over. But it is a challenge. The other thing that helps, though, is if your trees are super prolific. Now, this year seems to be an off year.
He shares with the birds.
Yeah.
He shares.
I don't have as much this year, so I'm going to be a little stingier. But last year, I had so many peaches and plums, I was kind of okay with sharing. In fact, it was a struggle to get the fruit, what do you want to say, the production taken care of because there was so much of it. And I do freeze it, you know, I bring it in and freeze it. But when you have scads of it, you know, finding the time to get out there and pick and peel and, you know, put it in Ziplocs and
your
freeze it.
Your neighbors will love you.
Just to bring them fresh stuff.
I share with my neighbors, and even during COVID, I used to put bowls of fruit in my driveway and say, just come get. You know?
That's sweet.
But you share with your neighbors. So,
yeah.
Friends, like, because not everybody has it, right?
No, it's true. It's true. I end up being a little bit stingy, though, because my husband loves to make smoothies, and I like to make jam. And so I always kind of hoard it, thinking, I need that in the freezer so that, you know, I can make jam and he can use it for his smoothies. So But this year, I don't think I'm going to have that problem. I'm just looking at the baby fruit, and it just has not been as good of a year this year as it was last year. I never really know why that happens, but
oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, what else should we talk about? Oh, let's talk about citrus just a little bit. It's really important. We were talking about watering earlier, and sometimes we forget about our trees, you know, because they're just there, and we figure they're fine. But in the summer especially, it's a good idea to deep water the trees rather than just rely on your normal sprinkler system. And particularly for citrus and avocado, which may be getting ready to produce fruit, you know, for the next season, or that it has the baby fruits on it. If you don't keep them watered, then you're going to have a ton of fruit drop and you won't have, you know, the citrus crop that you're expecting in the fall if you're doing the navel oranges, for instance.
Here's another one for you. This morning, I have my trees on drip and I have it going off, you know, very early in the morning. And I didn't realize it until about 9 o'clock this morning. It went off and one of the drip lines came apart.
Oh, no.
And I watered the hillside.
Oh, no.
So keep it, just, you know, we talk about it, just checking periodically your sprinkler systems and your drip systems. I don't know what my water bill is going to be because it was on for, you know, a period of time. But just always make sure that it's in good working order, you know, because water is so precious right now.
Yeah, and you don't want to lose fruit trees.
And this was a new, this is something that was just fixed in the last couple months.
Oh, wow.
So it failed.
It still broke.
Yeah, I just thought, I'm free and clear for a long time. And it was a brand new connection.
Oh, man.
So, and it failed. And yeah. That happens, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, I had a whole valve out. I had a row of citrus trees at the base of my slope. But it was the year that I had two grandsons born in the summer, and I was not paying attention, and those poor trees were without water until the fall, and then I noticed they were dying, so I lost about half of them from not checking. So
we've had that happen too.
Yeah,
and my very favorite tree had happened to it. I'm like, oh,
so sad.
I know. That was like the best plum tree in the world. I've never been able to figure out. There's never been a plum tree that good, and the system wasn't working, and we weren't paying attention to it, and it died.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing with trees is they're there and they're there and they're there and they're, you know, if it's a flower, you know, it wilts within a week, right? So you can catch it right away. But with a tree, it's a much longer process, and you might not notice it in time. So, but speaking of flowers, I'm loving my garden right now because we have had all of this June gloom. It's actually prolonging the look of the flower garden because usually by July, my flower garden is starting to, you know, the spring flowers are done because it's too hot. But this year, boy, there are drawbacks to the June gloom, but it's also allowed the flowers to last a little bit longer.
Yeah, you know, and I found this year I was able to have the spring flowers longer. And so then I got a little later start on my other flowers.
But when you just showed me a picture of your glads today, they're just going off like gangbusters.
Oh, and thank goodness, because, you know, my lupin and my poppies were just, I didn't want to take them out to put in flowers. And I was gone a lot last year, and I didn't do anything with my bulbs.
Uh-huh.
So I probably have like 100 bulbs going off in a short period of time.
Oh.
So the whole thing is just taken up with these bulbs, which is great because it's giving I planted dahlias. And so my dahlias are now growing, but they're not
not blooming yet. Yeah.
Well, they are blooming, but in June where they weren't blooming, I had all these glads starting to go off. So there was something in the garden the whole time, and now the glads are going to be like fading, and my dahlias that I planted are starting to like look really beautiful.
They'll take over, yeah.
So it was just kind of like, you know how it rotates during the year.
Yeah. Well, we usually talk about bulbs in the fall and the very early spring. And But this is just a reminder, even though you're not going to plant bulbs in July, this is a reminder to listen to our shows in the fall and the late winter, early spring, because if you get those bulbs in, they not only bloom for you that year, a lot of them will come back year after year. And so even when you get busy, you're still going to have this great bloom, as Katrina's describing.
I tell you, I had no time. You know, there was just no time. And when these things start coming up, it was just like...
It's a present.
It's a present. Oh my gosh, everybody's saying, like, what did you do to your garden? I'm like, oh, nothing.
Little Miss Me, Master Gardener.
Oh yeah, it looks like this all the time. But yeah, with the bulbs, it's really great that they just start coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no work, and it's wonderful for a busy, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah, for a couple of years. But then, as you know, every 3 years or so, it's a good idea to dig them up and divide them, because the bulbs do multiply. But when they're left to themselves, they get crowded, and then the blooms start to suffer. So you get away with no work for maybe 3 years, but then you need to dig them up and divide them.
And here's another thing. Last year, I planted like 15, like every 2 weeks.
Oh.
For months.
Yeah.
And so I had them coming up all season long. This year, I didn't do anything. I didn't pull them. I didn't have time, and it worked out okay. It's just... everywhere. I mean, and I didn't do anything, right? I was gone. I was busy. We had illness in the family. And I was just like, I'm just going to leave that bed. And between the lupin that comes back and the poppies that come back and the my dahlias are coming back, it was like a forgiveness year.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the best years I've ever had. I know it won't continue like that, but sometimes you get that.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas in July.
Exactly.
Right?
But in general, what Katrina's describing is that first flush of bloom, especially with the bulbs, but for her dahlias, for roses, for your perennials like salvias, one of the things you do keep doing in July when you get a chance, when you're not on vacation, early in the morning when it's cool, is get out there and deadhead.
Yes.
Because if you keep those plants deadheaded, now not the bulbs, they kind of bloom like the glads, they'll bloom and then they're done. But the dahlias keep blooming all until the weather gets cool if you keep deadheading them. And the same with your roses. Keep deadheading them and then you'll continue to have blooms throughout the summer.
I tend to deadhead a lot of different plants just because it just cleans up the garden. And I go out there with my little pruners and my cup of coffee and snip, snip, snip. And it's kind
of... The deadheading does two things. It tidies up your garden. And then it encourages the plants that rebloom to bloom again. But if you just leave, for instance, on roses, if you just leave those dead roses there, they'll form rose hips. And then that's telling the plant, oh, we've done our job. We formed our rose hips. Inside are those seeds. And that's what plants are programmed to do, is produce seeds for the next generation. So you can trick them a little bit if you just deadhead those plants, and then they'll keep pushing new flowers, because they still want to produce those seeds. Oh, speaking of roses, though, I just remembered, because I have to remember to do this myself. If anyone has climbing roses that only bloom once during the season, be sure that you prune them when the bloom is done. The reason you don't want to wait until January to prune those kinds of roses, which is when we usually prune the rest of our shrub roses, is that those plants only bloom once a year, and it's better to cut it right when they have finished blooming, because then the rest of the growth that they send out for the rest of that year is going to be the growth that's going to bloom the next year. And if you wait till January, you're probably going to be cutting off a lot of what would have bloomed if you hadn't
potential blooms
trimmed it. So just wanted to remind people of that, because I know some years I forget about it myself, and then I'm like, oh, geez, now I can't prune that in January because I don't want to prune off all the blossoms. And so then I have kind of this rangy, you know, wild-looking vine, which isn't the end of the world, but if you want it to be tidy, go ahead and
prune
it.
Better do it now than later.
Yeah, do it now.
Better results.
Exactly. And you can still plant more annuals if you have spots in your yard that had, you know, spring annuals and they were doing great, but now that the heat is here, you know, the snapdragons are done or the pansies are done or whatever, you can continue to plant the heat-loving annuals like marigolds and petunias, if you're a petunia person, cosmos, sunflowers, all of those heat-loving annuals, go ahead and plant them in July because our weather stays warm all the way till November, right? And so those annuals will have plenty of time to give you lots of color. So don't be afraid. And then the other thing to plant in July, I don't do a lot of planting in July, but if you like tropical plants, when the weather's warm, that's the time to plant them. So hibiscus, cannas, you know, those sorts of plants like to be planted in the summertime.
I have given up on hibiscus.
Do you get the white fly? Is that the issue?
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. And I spent so much time and energy dealing with white flies that the rest of the garden is neglected. And we worked on this poor hibiscus for years. And it was finally, we shovel pruned it, and I put in...
For those of you who don't know what shovel pruning is, it means you dig it up and you throw it away.
Hey, dude, we dug it up, and it was hard because it was beautiful, but it was like the bad child. Yeah. You know, the other ones didn't get attention because of this one child. And in that area, I put in a camellia.
Oh, nice.
And this camellia is the most prolific thing. It hardly, you know, you just fertilize it and deadhead it.
I love camellias.
It is the most beautiful camellia. And we've had this thing. It's like, I love this plant. And so I don't know about you with hibiscus or not, but I have failed miserably. And so many people I've talked to, just, it's like they're troubled one.
Yeah.
Troubled plant.
I'm not I don't have any hibiscus currently. I have had in earlier gardens, but once the white fly became so prolific, I just decided not to do them anymore. But I do want to talk about, because one of the things I enjoy this time of year in my garden, I do still really want to get out in the garden, but I just can't take too much of the heat. And so where I put myself this time of year is I put myself in my shade garden when I really want to get outside and it's not first thing in the morning. I'm like, I can still go out. I'll just be in the shade. And so I just wanted to chat a little bit with folks about shade plants, or, you know, partial filtered shade plants. It's a great time to plant them. You mentioned camellias. There are two kinds of camellias. There are the sasanquas that, you know, like more sun. And then there are the other camellias that the japonicas that will take more shade. And so I love those. And once you plant a camellia, I just never have any problems with them.
It just gives you.
It just gives. And the same, and another companion in the same kind of environment are the azaleas. Now, those would be in filtered to part shade. But when we talk about part shade, you have to be really careful because if you have an area that's really totally shady in the morning but gets blasted in the afternoon, you know, sun that's either south or west facing, don't think about shade plants for that. That's a really tricky kind of space because a shade plant is most likely not going to want to be blasted by hot sun in the afternoon. So when we're talking about shade and part shade, you know, we're talking about areas that are not going to get blasted by the sun. And then we should just mention there's full shade and part shade. Full shade, you have a lot smaller plant palette. You know, ferns do well in full shade, philodendrons, dracaenias, mondo grass. But, if it's full shade, you're not going to have a lot of flowering plants. Mm-hmm. So if you want the flowering plants, you want to look for a part shade or a filtered shade kind of place. Now, I have lots of filtered shade because I have lots of trees. But then the trouble is the roots of the trees are going to interfere with your plants. So that's why I have so many pots, is because if you get large pots, you can put a camellia or an azalea or these other part shade plants, begonias. But you do have to make sure that you're not just using little tiny pots that are going to dry out and lose their nutrients. But anyway, I encourage folks to give some consideration to planting a part shade garden or a full shade garden.
We have my husband, when we moved in, we live on the north side of a hill, and he wanted a fern garden. And we have a perfect spot for that fern garden. And it's right out, we have big windows by our bedroom, and it's right outside the bedroom. And I tell you, that fern garden, I'm like, well, if you want a fern garden, you could have a fern garden. You're like, we got a lot of room, right? That fern garden has been going, you know, it's just been wonderful, and it's green, and it's beautiful, and we look out on it, and it's like, it always looks good.
And it's probably calming.
It's very calming.
Especially in the heat.
And it's a hard place to find, you know, a place, what will grow there. But we did this probably like, maybe 8 feet by 12 feet or something like that. And it's just really pretty to look at. So think about that, because it's something I've never thought about, but it's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I clean it up a couple times a year, and that's about it.
And one last plant I forgot to mention, and then I think we're out of time, for your partial sun gardens is hydrangeas. And Katrina and I both love hydrangeas, even though they drink so much water. But we both have little samples of hydrangeas. And the one thing I wanted to mention about them is it's the time to prune them. So once at the end of June, once the flower head has turned brown, then you want to cut back that stalk and leave two buds. You know, you can look down the stalk and see, you know, where the buds are at the leaf nodes. And you want to cut it back to where you have two of those left, because hydrangeas bloom on new growth. And so those two buds are where that new growth is going to come out. And so be sure you prune your hydrangeas in end of June, early July.
Good point.
Yeah. And I think we're out of time, right?
I think we're there.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks so much for listening, everyone. Enjoy your summer and be sure you stay covered up with a hat and sunscreen.
And hydrate your plants and hydrate yourself. Until next month.
Happy gardening.